And welcome. This is Andrew Horowitz, the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And we got lots to talk about today. Markets have been, of course, bumpy of late. We have Michael Santoli, who is with us today, and he is the associate editor for Barron's, Dow Jones Business and Financial Weekly. We got lots to talk about for him because I'm going to pick his brain on what's going on with the markets now and what we're going to do about it in the future. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the things that are coming up. We have some other great shows that are in the pipeline right now. I have a show coming up on technology. What are the best technology to be looking at now? And kind of the battle of the biggies. You know, we're going to kind of go back and forth on maybe looking at Intel versus AMD and Microsoft versus Apple. That's going to be a lot of fun. I also want to let you know that I've been doing a lot of writing, of course, on the blog site, thedisciplinedinvestor.com. There's not only show notes from this show and others, but I also have a quite lengthy article list that I write almost every day. I have articles on Bank of America I call Last Man Standing. You have to wonder who is going to be the last man standing when this whole mortgage crisis sort of just unfolds and goes away eventually. Bank of America looks like a really good opportunity. I did an interview on thestreet.com. They interviewed me. Aaron Task asked me some questions. It's on the site. You can listen to that as well. Also, I kind of tongue-in-cheek put together an article on what I call Placations for a Financial Crisis, the Planner's Playbook. What do I mean by that? Well, you hear the words like diversification and we're in it for the long haul and, you know, you don't lose unless you sell and it's only paper losses at this point. Ah, hogwash. Take a look at that because I think that we really need to kind of break down what they're talking about and really read between the lines at this point and understand, you know, what should we be doing? Because most of the time we're talking about inaction when, in fact, this market demanded some action. And finally, an article entitled A Miracle, Bush Parting the Bankrupt Sea. Talk about how really the last savior of this market, potentially right now from going down another 1,000 or 1,500 points, is going to be either Bush or the Fed. Anyway, that's all available on thedisciplinedinvestor.com, the site that really goes hand in hand with this podcast. I also want to let you know that the book is finally for sale, and right now you can go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com bookstore right on the site and order your copy right now. You know, last of the pre-orders have been done. We got a lot of people that, in fact, did order. The good news is that it is for sale right now, $14.95. Get you 240 pages of jam-packed financial advice. You want to know about technical analysis, quantitative analysis, fundamental analysis, or maybe even the tools of the trade, what you should be going to be using, what you should be using every single day, every single week, and every month. What periodicals, what brokers, what mutual fund companies. I mean, everything's in there. Go to the Disciplined Investor right now and take the time to take a look at what's going on. Buy yourself a copy. I'm sure you'll be very pleased that you did. The show today I'm pretty excited about because Mike Santoli is a great guy. I am really interested in asking him some really important questions about this market. And I think he has some of the answers. A great writer in Barron's, very seasoned. So you know what? As usual, I want you to do me a favor. Get ready because the Disciplined Investor is going to get going and going to start right now.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Call for your free brochure today. Toll-free, dial 888-964-7526. Horowitz & Company. From seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
All right, we're here today with Mike Santoli, who is the associate editor for Barron's, the Dow Jones Business and Financial Weekly. Mr. Santoli, he writes the Streetwise column, which offers a forward-looking take on the financial markets, and he's a regular guest on CNBC, a contributor, and really all-around great guy. So thanks for joining us today, Mike.
My pleasure.
You know, one of the things I thought we'd talk about is your take on what do you think is the biggest mistake that investors have made this time around?
Well, it seems like it's a familiar mistake, but it seems as if the reckless use of leverage obviously seems to be the thing that's coming home to roost. And I think more broadly, what that leverage, that appetite for leverage was symptomatic of was an assumption that this very stable, low volatility environment that really prevailed for 2 or 3 years in the market, stock, bond, all kinds of markets, was somehow going to project out in the indefinite future. To me, this idea that there was this large stability trade, you know, this lots of borrowing, lots of essentially extrapolating a very calm environment into the future, not really stress testing portfolios for what would happen. First of all, if those strategies got very crowded and there were too many people doing them, and then obviously if you have volatility spike, the cost of leverage goes up, you have the margin calls of liquidations. That's what we're seeing now. I don't really think it was an error in fundamental analysis. I think it was an error in portfolio tactics and construction.
Well, one of the things I noticed was that for even weeks up to the final, okay, we do have a problem here, was I was watching and reading and really trying to understand what's going on. And the constant theme was, hey, there's plenty of liquidity out there. Don't worry about a thing. But that really wasn't the real case, was it?
It really wasn't. Well, I think it was an error in how people were defining liquidity. Liquidity is not simply the availability of lots of money that can flush into markets. It's both the availability of the money and the willingness to put it at risk. And what we've had is the money is still out there somewhere. It's going into money market funds. The banks are calling it in. People are keeping it on their books. The sort of oil exporting countries are not necessarily throwing it around the markets as much as they did. It's just that there's a reduced willingness to sort of fund the risk taking. So I do think that was, you're absolutely right. People got over reliant on that theme. I had, been writing that, essentially this focus on liquidity and this focus on a constant flow of new buyers for assets out there was late bull market thinking. Essentially, we got used to the idea that earnings were going to grow a lot, they were going to slow down. Interest rates were probably not going to go much lower. People were grasping, I think, for fundamental catalysts. And the one thing to fall back on was, private equity guys and hedge fund folks were going to sit there and use cheap money to buy assets.
Right. But here's interesting. The same topic you just discussed about the continuation of people just buying and constantly coming into the market. You had the housing situation where people were just buying houses almost. I mean, you question how many houses could one person own, right? Because they were just buying everything left and right. And one of the most – the honest thing that happened is we had everybody buying house. What happened to everybody out there? I mean, nobody's moving. Nobody's buying a house. I mean, this thing just dried up almost overnight. Like, every buyer disappeared.
That's right.
I mean, it's
really the way of one-way markets and bubbles that last a long time. And, what do we have this week? Some numbers that said that we have almost 10 months worth of inventory.
Yeah, 16-year loan
on the market right now. And it's just projecting out when this market can stabilize.
Right, and that's a 16-year low, I believe. So what's the next shoe to drop here? I mean, we've had obviously the housing market. We've had the credit crunch. We've had many companies come out with what they're saying is their understanding of what they have on the books and the concern. We've hedge funds saying, hey, wait a minute. You know what? We really can't liquidate. What's the next potential thing that we have that's going to be the next shoe to drop?
The handful of things that I'm watching are the big brokers who are closing their books for the third quarter: Goldman, Morgan Stanley, Bear Stearns, Lehman Brothers. In fact, some of them did it on Friday. Those reports are going to be somewhat key to see exactly if we can shed any light on these all these instruments that people have been in, and exactly what the kind of damage was, whether they were able to price a lot of this junk that they ended up holding. That's number one. Obviously, we have the Fed meeting September 18th. I think this market, I've written this a lot, has consistently over-anticipated when the Fed was going to start to become friendly and when it should sort of come to the rescue. I think, this sell-off on Tuesday that, after the Fed minutes from August 7th, I mean, that was just an excuse to pull back a little bit more.
Well,
I've been viewing this as a stress test of the equity bull market, not necessarily, the end that's going to doom things.
Right.
But we're really going to have to – it's really going to have to prove itself to be – just that at some point.
Well, I agree with you about that discussion about the minutes were released. We knew a lot of the information in there, but I think moreover it was some of the concern with the financials again and the concern of some of the issues that they have out there, and that's really what started pushing things. We saw a downgrade by Merrill Lynch, downgrading Citi and Lehman, and I mean that's a big problem. I'm real concerned with those guys too, and it almost seems like two things. Number one, I think that many people are looking to the Fed as usual as the sugar daddy. Oh my God, I won't do it again. I promise. Just get me out of this one this time. And the second thing is that you question whether or not people are going to allow themselves to kind of say, we are going to be more defensive. We're going to control ourselves. We're going to make sure that we're in it for the long haul, or if the panic is going to continue. That's my biggest concern right now.
It is a big concern. The one thing that I actually take some comfort in is, first of all, the equity markets were not the epicenter of the excesses,
right,
and therefore the damage probably shouldn't be as nasty as it has been in credit markets. But and I do think that financial stocks are, they're obviously the one and only bellwether for the moment. They look maybe like value traps because they're looking cheap, but you don't know what the real earnings and book value is right now. But one thing I will take comfort in is, you had a Merrill analyst, put a sell and talk about Bankers Street for Countrywide a few weeks ago before when that thing was bottoming. And you go back a couple, 3 years, and it was a Merrill analyst, and I'm not picking on Merrill, but these are often the sentiment tools that you can sort of see very clearly in hindsight, who said GM, could be a chapter 11,
right,
in 04. So I do think that, a lot of times the analysts are reflecting market sentiment. Market sentiment did get pretty nasty. Look, this market went down 12% in a month and bounced 8% from an intraday low a week ago Thursday. So it's obviously in a kind of a fibrillation mode right now, trying,
right,
to figure out what's real.
Yeah, I mean, and that brings up another good question, because I have been trying to understand for many, many years the question, or the answer to the question of, who do you go to trust? Who, where do investors, the average Joe out there? Listen, I just have a book, The Disciplined Investor, which you know about, that's coming out in bookstores very soon. And my whole goal was to provide a basic to an understanding of what are the things that investors could utilize and where to go and where to get information. We have a whole chapter on tools of the trade, which says, okay, you know what? By the way, the absolute must read for the week is Barron's. That's the number one in my book, just to let you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that where do investors go to find out good information, not just the sentiment? Because I've been watching various shows and all that and saying, hey, Intel's a great buy and all that. I mean, to get away from the safe stuff to find out the real story, where do people go?
It's a tough question. I mean, I actually have found that it's become a little bit tougher to anchor oneself on, very trustworthy sources out there for the real common sense approach. I think the blogification of investment advice has been, on the one hand, it's increased the volume and it's basically created a lot of these great niches where you can scan for stuff. But I don't find, aside from, the sort of basic areas like something like Barron's, I actually like Seeking Alpha as a kind of an aggregator of some common sense market information. But I think it's obviously quite tough. Now, the types of analysts and sort of strategists that I gravitate to a lot are the ones that have some rigorous empirical method, who try to be kind of unemotional and objective about how they're, calling the market, basically listening to the market, not telling it what it should be. These are folks like, Ned Davis Research and the Luthold Group and Lowry's, a lot of these services. If you really have a market-wide view, not looking for individual security recommendations, I do like those folks. Now, of course, they're expensive. They're priced for institutions, but some of them can be, available elsewhere.
Yeah. All right, when we come back, we're going to pick up this discussion about financial stocks, money markets, and mutual funds. I want to talk to him because Michael has a great deal of experience with the whole idea of mutual funds, and that's where his, I think, early years were, dealing with mutual funds. We'll be right back on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
It's about you. It's about money. It's the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Stay tuned for more.
This is Eric Savitz from Barron's Tech Trader Daily. Make sure to subscribe to hear me discuss the latest technology trends on the next Disciplined Investor Podcast.
Looking for answers to today's complex financial markets? Then be sure to get your copy of The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success, your all-in-one guide to investing. Order now at thedisciplinedinvestor.com or your favorite bookstore. The Disciplined Investor. Together, we will reach success.
All right, we're here with Mike Santelli again, and he is the associate editor for Barron's, a really bright guy, in my opinion. I read his stuff all the time and respect him very much. So we were talking about the Fed and where do people look, and let's talk about the biggest concern that I think people have these days right now. Is my money market safe? Because, what we know is that for the most part, and you're aware of this, money markets from brokerage firms are the number one revenue source for most firms. So the fact of the matter is that, you know, they're going to make sure, I think, that at all costs, their money markets are safe. But we've heard about concern about some of the dollar number. We've seen many firms come out with a discussion that they have some of these, you know, these days I'm calling them derivatives like they were, right? Which nobody's really used that word very much. But derivatives, I mean, are money markets safe? What do we have to look out for? What should we be doing now?
It seems to me, you know, you can say in general that money markets are somewhat safe, but only because, as you say, the firms are likely to backstop them when they get to the dollar net asset value.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they're not safe in the sense that they're not loaded entirely with the traditional, very safe, high investment grade, you know, commercial paper and you know, other short-term government and agency obligations. They in many cases, were stretching for yield. Of course, that's been another one of these lessons, that when you stretch for yield, you inevitably take more risk. You get nothing for free. And so, yes, some of these, you know, asset-backed commercial paper instruments that obviously went bad, and really stuff that money market funds didn't have any business being in.
Mm-hmm.
In general, are they safe? I think you actually have to go look at the you know, at the reported holdings of each one to know the risk level that had been taken on. I am comforted somewhat by the fact that, you know, as you say, the managers usually will make good on at least to support the NAV. But, you know, it's just another lesson here. I actually noticed that one of the biggest money market managers, Federated Investors, that stock has been under pressure because people are concerned about exactly
the big
that.
Bond holdings there. Any of the big junk bond holdings and, you know, in the below investment grade, they call it today. But you know what we've recommended for our clients, for those that are in the sweep accounts with our holdings? What we've done is we've actually moved them en masse to the Treasury fund, the money market Treasury fund. I mean, why not? I mean, it's just, you know, you're going to sacrifice maybe 1% yield, but to have that safety right at this exact moment, it doesn't, you know, what's the big deal? Just move it to a Treasury-backed money market, and it's a little bit safer. But I don't think there's any reason to panic either, but I think people are bringing that up as the next thing that's a concern. All right, two more things. Mutual funds, some of these are imploding. TFS market neutral fund, you know, the market neutral funds are supposed to be safe. And we see some of these that have gone either long short or use some kind of quant structuring to figure out what kind of risk adjusted return. And some of these are down 10-12% all of a sudden when they're supposed to be, I mean, neutral, nothing. Nothing's supposed to be going on here. So what's actually happened here?
This is a fascinating episode here. Well, essentially, it was just such a crowded trade. Many of these funds using very similar models and using leverage to actually, you know, skim a little bit more return. You know, it seems as if it's interesting, I think, from an investor psychology point of view, that market neutral type strategies did get so popular. It really was, to some degree, people fighting the last war, thinking, hey, these things held up pretty well in the 2000 to 2002 bear market. They must be magic. And what they found was, again, these folks assumed that historical relationships between all these investment factors were going to continue as they always had. They were squeezing small returns out of these paired trade strategies and, like I say, using leverage to magnify. And they have had these kinds of episodes in the past where they've had tremendous damage in a short period of time in 1998, at one point in 2002 as well. They essentially did not adjust their sort of volatility assumptions. So it seems to me that volatility storms, they create these disruptions and they, you know, people basically pull in their horns and they pass. But, you know, market neutral, again, it's not escaping market risk. It's only as good as the nuts and bolts of the strategy itself. So there's, again, no free
loss.
Classic market neutral strategies were meant only to beat T-bills. So if you went to the average person who's buying a market neutral mutual fund and said, you know, we're only going to try to squeeze a little more out of this than T-bills, they may not have thought that was a great bargain anyway.
Right. No, I agree. And it's interesting because when I look at market neutral, the whole idea was to hedge the overall portfolio, not to get anything more than that. And I think once again, this reevaluation, like we had back in 1999, 2000 through 2002, where we had some funds that had listed that they were value funds, but yet they were small caps in there. Or we had, you know, a fund that maybe, you know, said they were, you know, investment grade, but yet maybe they had a few junk bonds in there. I think that's what's going to end up being the result of all this is going to be once more a reevaluation, because with a mutual fund, the biggest problem I find is you said before that, hey, look at what they own inside the portfolio. But sometimes when you're looking at that, you're looking at data that's 3 months old.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. There's no easy way to do that.
You know, can you imagine if I told my clients, you know, they asked me to see their portfolio. I said, here's a statement. But, oh, by the way, you know, it's 3 months ago what you're looking at. But don't worry. It's kind of the same. I mean,
that's right.
They're not going to put up with that for very long. All right. Finally, let's talk about this. Hedge funds. Once again, it seems like the hedge fund universe has caused some major problems by using leverage. It's, again, the theme is leverage, leverage, leverage. Mm-hmm. And do you think there's finally going to be regulation on the hedge fund market?
You know, you would think that that's going to happen. I think there's going to be a process of kind of, you know, finding out who the bad actors were and seeing if there was anything to be done to cinch up regulation. I think the way it might occur is by way of the prime brokers who essentially finance and process trades for all the hedge funds. That's a very concentrated market. I do think that you might see some regulatory efforts with regard to, you know, how these prime brokers oversee their aggregate portfolios and try to, you know, have an early warning system for when there's some kind of excesses in one piece of it. Now, what's intriguing is that this all comes after a period when regulations have been loosened mostly at the bidding of the hedge fund world, such as eliminating the rule for that requires upticks before selling short stock.
Right.
Also, allowing them essentially to magnify, to take on more leverage through margin requirements that were essentially more liberal. So obviously, we might have a reevaluation, but I don't really think it's going to create, you know, a wave of heavy new regulation on the hedge fund world.
But why would the regulators allow for this? I mean, you know, it's amazing the uptick rule, and there's been some argument. All right, so they eliminated a big deal. If the hedgies wanted to do it, they just buy it in the background and sell it on the other side and kind of create their own uptick. But I mean, why are the regulators allowing for less or allowing them to be more aggressive? And in fact, the hedge funds have less regulation than any other part of the industry.
Yes, they do. I mean, I think the reason is you're able to make an academic, intellectual argument for eliminating the uptick rule, basically saying, well, there's no downtick rule. There should be no preferential treatment of one type of trader strategy than another. And for the portfolio margining rules, you know, they take a very simple example, which is if I own a stock and I own a put option that directly hedges the stock, I should be able to have, you know, a greater margin availability because I'm hedged.
Right.
Well, you take that and then you interpret it in the widest possible fashion and you have the area for abuse.
Right. All right. Well, end on this. What do you know about and what can you tell me about your thoughts on naked shorts?
You know, it seems like it's this chronic issue that I think in a somewhat small subset of stocks, there is a problem. A lot of it is, I think, just sort of a technical back office failure to deliver stock type of thing. Some of it is come by honestly. I don't think that they're the reason the markets go down. I think they're kind of the sort of scavengers, the opportunists on the fringes that do essentially cause individual stocks to go down for a short period of time. But I would note that those stocks that are always heavy on the naked shorting list, it's not as if they're universally beaten down. So they can't necessarily have their way. But it really does seem as if it should be a higher priority to try to, you know, get the systems in order to root that stuff out.
Yeah, it would seem to me that this whole scenario that has been built up this time with, you know, essentially a replay of the 1929 availability of credit and the lack of overall legislation or regulation and allowing people to get into something they shouldn't, and all the things that have gone on with this list, I just have to think that this time around they're going to finally wake up and say, you know what, we need to fix some of these problems once and for all so we don't get into something much more serious down the road.
You would think so, although, you know, unfortunately, historically, it's taken a lot more market damage than we've seen so far for that to, you know, filter into some kind of policy. Although the fact that you have, you know, just your average small homeowners essentially on the hook for a lot of the Wall Street-driven abuses is perhaps going to prompt some kind of action,
mm-hmm.
like you say.
So, and last, and this is truly the last thing, Countrywide, going to be around or it's going by the wayside?
I think it's going to be around. The question might be is if it's going to be radically shrunk or placed inside a more humongous institution mm-hmm. that can better take on such a broad degree of market risk. I don't think I would personally play a stock on either side at the moment.
Yeah, I know. It's definitely questionable. We started to nip at it for more of our aggressive investors, but I'll tell you, it's a bit scary with the volatility these days because there's a lot of potential problems that are awaiting us in this whole market. All right, my guest today has been Mike Santoli, and thanks so much for joining me today and shedding some light on this. I'm sure my listeners are going to really appreciate it. And, of course, you can go right to Barron's online or pick up your copy of Barron's on the weekends to read all of his sagely advice. And I think that's something that everybody really should do because it's really something that I think is beneficial and he really is looking out for your benefit. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure, Andrew. Thank you.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.